Baby boomers remember back when food was fun. Today is food nostalgia as we talk with author and television producer David Hoffman about the food we loved as kids. That's today on Older and Wiser. David Hoffman is the creator and executive producer of The Best Thing I Ever Ate and The Best Thing I Ever Made, the long-running Emmy-winning franchise that aired on Food Network. Love that show. It's a good show, David.
Thank you, Bob.
Well, you're kind of a foodie. You like well-prepared food and fine dining and all that. But today we're really not talking about the fine dining stuff, right?
No, not at all. And I'm happy. I mean, you know, the top of our list, if we start talking about things like grilled cheese and macaroni and cheese, two of my favorite things in the world.
So cheese. You're a cheese guy.
I do like cheese.
Okay.
Yes.
Describe your fascination with cheese. And does it make you nostalgic for the good old days?
Well, I think for any of us, if there's a piece of yellow cheese wrapped in a thing of cellophane, it makes us nostalgic.
Yeah.
I think of Swiss cheese on the top of a pastrami or corned beef sandwich.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good cheese. What about Velveeta?
I do like Velveeta.
My mom used to really swear by Velveeta, and we had one of those little roly cheese cutters, you know, the kind with the roller.
Mm-hmm.
That was specifically designed for Velveeta.
Velveeta because of the softness of
it? I think so.
I do feel like Velveeta makes probably one of the best grilled cheese sandwiches. And I actually have a macaroni and cheese recipe that has, you know, creme fraiche in it and, yeah, Gruyere and you know, a couple of very expensive $15 a pound cheeses.
Yeah.
And the secret ingredient sort of is about 6 ounces of Velveeta that gives, because of the creaminess and everything else like that. If you combine it with other cheeses, it's like perfect.
So you're...
Let me ask you, when you were a kid, was a grilled cheese sandwich a big thing for you? And is a grilled cheese sandwich a big thing for you now?
You know, I do enjoy a grilled cheese sandwich. My problem was my mom would make it very greasy. There'd be butter on one side, butter on the other side. So if I pick up a grilled cheese sandwich, I'd have greasy all over me. And I was kind
and
of
there's a problem.
I
with
was
that?
A neatish. I was a neatish kid.
Oh.
I've since lost that. But in the early days, I was a little bit neat, and the grilled cheese sandwich was just a little too greasy for me. I'm just saying.
Well,
unless there was
there are surveys, and who does these? I don't know. But there's a survey that says that by the time a kid graduates from high school, the kid will have eaten 1,500 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
I ate a lot of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
But because adults, and not just kids, eat, and college students, and not just kids, eat a lot of grilled cheese is the number one most popular sandwich in the United States.
Really?
I had a peanut butter and jelly. I had a tuna fish. I had a BLTs.
Have you ever made one with an iron?
No, I have not. I've seen it done. Oh,
I think you can actually do it.
Yeah,
It screws up the iron, I would think.
when grilled cheese was first introduced, it was an open-faced sandwich. It wasn't until the 60s that they started putting another piece of bread on it. So maybe that's a way that it would be more desirable.
More desirable for me. I could eat it with a fork.
But I will give you my favorite grilled cheese hack. That is the trick to making the most perfect grilled cheese.
Okay.
And that is to slightly cover the outside, not with butter, but with mayonnaise.
Okay.
And what it will do is it makes the sandwich more crispy.
Oh.
And it doesn't burn. It browns because mayonnaise has a lower burning point than butter.
Mm.
So when the butter burns, the sandwich tends to burn as opposed to get that nice toasty brown color. It just burns.
You got
to
be careful probably not to cook it on too high of a heat or.
Yeah, but you know, but it's you want that. I mean, the great thing about the sandwich is the outside crunch of the bread and then the softness on the inside.
That is a great hack. That is a great hack. I'm going to try it.
So I heartily recommend it.
Wonderful.
Have you ever seen the Virgin Mary in your grilled cheese sandwich?
No, but somebody has.
In 2004, it happened. A girl, you know, made a grilled cheese sandwich, and she took a bite, and then her mother looked at it and saw the Virgin Mary. And the big thing was that they sold the sandwich on eBay for
$28,000. How about if we move on to, you know, in the 60s, we were all fascinated with space travel.
Yes.
And I remember watching all those launches and being so fascinated with the astronauts and wanting to be an astronaut and wanting to eat like the astronauts, that there was a little trend in the 60s where we all wanted to eat like the astronauts.
Well, the success of Tang, people think that Tang was invented for the astronauts, because remember the slogan was like what the astronauts drink.
Yeah.
But it wasn't true at all. It's like they made this drink that was a powder and, you know, you mixed it up. Supposedly it was like orange juice. John Glenn drank it on the Mercury space flight. And that's really what made it successful, is the fact that NASA chose to use it. Mm-hmm. Rather than it actually being invented for them. In fact, it was like years later than somebody asked Buzz Aldrin about Tang, and his response was, Tang sucks. Well, William Mitchell, who I mentioned invented Tang,
yeah,
also invented Cool Whip,
okay,
and Pop Rocks.
Pop Rocks are the things you when they mix with your saliva, they create a popping sound,
yeah,
and sort of and explode dissolve, in your mouth.
And
explode
in your mouth and dissolve.
What was the other thing you said?
Cool Whip.
Cool Whip was, I remember my mom used to think that was the best thing ever. That it
but
was
they're
much
all kind
better.
Of space-age foods because they're not really
they're not really food.
What they
they're
are.
Not really what they are. Cool Whip is not whipped cream at all.
Yeah.
It's not, in fact, when you look at the ingredients on Cool Whip, there's nothing you really recognize.
Well, that's true of a lot of the stuff that we ate as kids, which
is
interesting.
It's awfully delicious, though.
I think of Jell-O as a space-age food. Does that?
Do you really?
Yeah, because of the texture and the color and the way that light reflects through
it. Yeah. You know, the thing I remember about Jell-O is that you could put junk in it to make it something else.
That's true. And there is, but
like anything. You could put, like, fruit cocktail.
Yes, but you know what the problem is when you put fruit in Jell-O, it sinks. That's why if you look at a Jell-O mold with fruit, the fruit isn't sort of like spaced through.
It goes to the bottom.
It goes to the bottom. The only
How do you keep it up?
You use seedless grapes. That's the only fruit that doesn't sink in Jell-O.
No kidding.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's just a fact that the Jell-O people will make public.
Interesting.
Or some scientists figured out somewhere. This surprised me. 40% of all the Jell-O that's sold today is sugar-free.
40% is sugar-free.
However, back in the 60s, it wasn't called sugar-free Jell-O. Do you remember what it was called? It had a totally different name.
Did it?
Yes.
It wasn't Jell-O. It wasn't called Jell-O.
Well, it was the Jell-O people made it, but yeah, they didn't call it sugar-free Jell-O. It was called Deserta.
No.
D-Z-D-Z-E-R-T-A. I thought you would remember that.
No. I wasn't much into sugar-free foods when I was 10.
Commercials, you know.
I don't remember Deserta. Very
well, did you like any foods that you took, that like a powder and mixed them with something?
I do recall a product called Shake-A-Puddin'. Have you heard of it?
No.
I have a little commercial here for it. Shake-A-Puddin'. It came out in like the early 60s, I think. It's Here's a new kind of, see if you recognize this commercial. It's called Shake-A-Puddin',
and all you do is shake it. New Shake-A-Puddin' dessert mix from Royal. Kids make it themselves. Add water, powder, and shake.
And you get to shake it up, and it turns into pudding, kind of like a science experiment.
Did it gel?
Yeah, kind of. It was
congeal,
it was a little bit grainy, and it was just like a slop, more or less, like a thick.
So like a protein drink?
Chocolatey protein drink. Yeah. Shake-A-Puddin'. It's gone. I don't even know who made that, but it was not a success.
I bet you Utah isn't the official Shake-A-Puddin' state, but the official snack food of Utah is Jell-O, and specifically lime Jell-O.
Utah has an official snack food?
Yes, it does.
Does California have an official snack food?
I don't think so, but the fact
is, most states have an official snack food?
No, because there's so much Jell-O eaten in Utah.
My mom used to make a delicious lime Jell-O mold with a cottage cheese, and she would mix the cottage, so it was not, it was opaque.
Yes.
Now, you know, and then she put in pineapples and like nuts, walnuts, and it was quite delicious.
Was that a Thanksgiving thing or just?
It was a Thanksgiving thing, as a matter of fact. Yes, yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah, there's an orange one where you use orange sherbet.
Any more good information about Jell-O, or should we move on to our next?
I think we should. You know, talking about Jell-O though makes me think about and what was served as an American meal makes me think. No, seriously, about ethnic food when I was growing up.
Yeah, that is true.
Because, you know, the idea of what Chinese food was, you know, I mean, kids today, they eat sushi. They, you know, they give them pasta. We didn't have pasta. We had noodles.
Noodles, yeah. We didn't know what pasta. You know, we never called it pasta.
No, there was spaghetti.
Spaghetti.
And there was noodles.
Noodles.
And if you got exotic, we had ravioli.
Oh.
Maybe lasagna.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, of course, the
macaroni.
Well,
my mom could make lasagna with cottage cheese.
Well, I hope she put some meat and tomatoes.
Well, yeah, there was meat and tomatoes.
But she used cottage cheese instead of ricotta.
Oh, we didn't have ricotta cheese.
Ricotta.
Ricotta in Indiana. No, they had cottage cheese.
No one had much. I mean, we
It was good, I'll tell you. Homemade Indiana lasagna with cottage cheese is not bad. It's quite tasty.
Well, you know, I mean, for most of us, the memory of, like, you're talking eating at home. And
yeah.
If your parents didn't make spaghetti, you start thinking about Chef Boyardee and stuff like that, you know, spaghetti in the can.
Right.
But what people don't realize is that Chef Boyardee was actually a real person. And there was a guy.
He must have been a great chef.
Well, actually, he was.
No kidding.
His name was Hector Boyardee.
Uh-huh.
And he was a chef in New York, at the Plaza Hotel.
No kidding.
He then moved to the Washington, D.C. area. He worked down there, and he became the personal chef as well, or catered the inauguration of Woodrow Wilson. Then he went to Cleveland and had a restaurant. And his spaghetti and meat sauce was so popular that he used to sell the meat sauce in milk bottles, like out of the kitchen.
Oh.
And then they would give, and he would sell the dried pasta as well, and people would go home and make it themselves. So then comes some marketer who says, like, well, we should make this. And, you know, the marketers are the people that changed the recipe and made it so it was shelf stable.
He must have
and everything
hated
else like that. Well, maybe he hated it, as they say, all the way to the bank. But the interesting thing is his name was Boyardee. But he didn't think, the marketers didn't think anyone would be able to pronounce his Italian name. So they spelled it phonetically as Boy
R.D.
And that's where Chef Boyardee came from.
We Americans, I'm telling you, we really are a lot, aren't we?
Do you know what the first franchise pizza parlor was?
I don't know. Shakey's?
It was. It was Shakey's. And there's still a few Shakey's around the country. I mean, obviously it doesn't hold.
Is that the place that had the piano player?
They had the piano player, which was a big part of the attraction.
Yeah. or the downside in my mind. I did not like the piano player.
Oh, really?
No, I didn't want to. Did you like the pizza at Shakey's? Was the quality good?
Well, you know, when I was a kid, it was the pizza parlor chain that was available. I don't think there was a Pizza Hut near where I lived in Richmond, Virginia. I don't know that there was a Pizza Hut there at the time.
Yeah.
Domino's started in the 1960, but I don't really know when it hit that.
Yeah, I don't remember
area.
Domino's much. No.
Because it started in
Michigan. It's that old.
Yeah, Domino's has a great story, but the one thing I wanted to tell you about Shakey's that sort of actually made me, well, I don't know. It makes me laugh, but I probably shouldn't laugh at it.
I don't know why. I'm scared about what you're about to say.
Well, it's why they called it Shakey's.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, the owner of Shakey's had an accident. And he had a shake, and his nickname was Shaky.
Oh, that's
so when
terrible.
So people
kind of made fun of him for
his nickname for years.
Was it like a palsy or something?
No, I don't really know. I think he was in the war,
and
he had a little bit of an accident, and he had a...
That's really inappropriate.
He had nerve damage. That's what it was. Following malaria. It wasn't the war. I just looked at it. It was following malaria. So he was nicked. His name was Sherwood, and his friends called him Shakey.
It's awful.
Domino's was started by two brothers, and they bought a pizza parlor in Ypsilanti, Michigan.
Is it Ypsilanti or is it Ypsilanti?
I thought it was Yip. Because it's a Y.
I know. I think the Y is silent.
But then there would be nothing because it's YP. There's no I.
I think it's Ypsilanti.
Well, then the Y is pronounced as an I.
Let's Google it.
Well, you can. While you're Googling, I will give you a little bit of the history. They paid $900 in 1960 for a pizza joint, which would be about $7,000 today.
Cheap.
Yeah.
That's a good deal.
And then about a year later, there were two brothers. Mm-hmm. One brother, Tom, brought the other brother, Jim, out. And he did so because they had a Volkswagen that they owned together that they used to deliver the pizzas. So Tom said to Jim, I'll give you the Volkswagen if you give me the pizza restaurant. Jim didn't want anything more to do.
That is not a good
trade. That was 1960. In 1998, Tom sold Domino's, like 93% of Domino's, to Bain Capital for $1 billion.
Oh.
So the other thing is, you know, Domino's logo is like a, you know, a domino piece from the game with three dots on it.
So yes.
When they came up with the
logo. So what's that about?
Well, when they
Why
came,
three dots?
Because when they came up with the logo, they had three locations. So their idea was that every time they added a new location,
they were going to add
they
another
were gonna
dot.
Add dot. You know, like the stars on the American
flag. It's a
cute
idea. They figured six was all they would ever get to, I suppose. Oh, eight. How many dots can you put on a...
Well, if they had done that in 2012, they would have had 9,742 dots on their domino.
So it didn't that's quite, a lot of information.
Quite, it didn't quite work.
I'm afraid to tell you, it's ipsilanti.
Yep.
Ip.
Well,
the Y sound.
I'm glad to know.
Things you know. The things you learn here on the program. Pizza. I love pizza, but it's not really Italian. Is it?
Oh, yes, it is.
Is it really?
Yeah.
So it's originated in Italy.
Well, probably the most famous pizza is the margherita pizza.
Mm. Which is just tomatoes and cheese.
And basil.
Oh, and basil.
And you know why?
No, why?
Well, the queen was coming to visit, and the pizza maker decided to do something in the three colors of the Italian flag.
Oh, they needed something green.
Red, white, and green.
Oh, yeah.
So that's that. So it's very, you know, Naples is known for their pizzas. And
why is it called Margherita?
Queen Margherita.
Oh, Queen Margherita. Oh, I missed that. Yeah. I stopped listening to you every once in a while.
Okay. If you're talking about Domino's and pizza delivery and stuff like that.
Yeah.
If you're in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. the people at Domino's say if there's an increase in deliveries to the White House or the State Department or any of the government agencies, that probably within the next 24 hours, there's going to be a major announcement or a major news breaking event.
Because
people
are
working late, and so they're ordering pizzas because they got to eat. So,
I wonder if that's just a little joke.
No.
You think that's real?
It's.
Speaking of ethnic foods, I think I have a commercial here. Hold on. Let me see if I can play it for you, David.
Look, golden gravy, bean sprouts, water chestnuts, bamboo shoots, mushrooms.
Seems authentic.
From LaJoy's new frozen Chinese foods.
LaJoy's Chinese foods.
Swing.
American.
So I guess they thought if they added the American flag at the end and said threw in the word swing, it would kind of bring in the Americans to the idea of eating Chinese food.
I don't think there was, I grew up in a small town and there were Chinese restaurants. Mm. And I mean, the offerings were very, very basic, like maguga pan, which is not even Chinese. It's some American dish.
Oh, really? So and even in Chinese restaurants, they were making an Americanized version?
Oh, sure.
Oh, I see. Okay. Where I grew up, we did not have a Chinese restaurant. Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up in central Indiana and certainly in our little town, we did not have one. And the big city of Indianapolis was nearby, and I don't know that they had one. So I didn't taste Chinese food outside of LaJoy until I was out of college, probably. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying, the experience that LaJoy brought to us was valuable. Pigs in blankets became very big in the 60s when someone figured that you could take
like a crescent roll?
The crescent roll and not use it as a crescent roll.
And wrap it around a little sauce.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I will tell you, they're still popular today. If you, and there are restaurants and there are caterers that make them and they use quality hot dogs and their own.
Yeah, now it's very fancy, right?
Puff pastry. But it's interesting. If you put them out at a party, still they will be the first thing to go.
They, now we consider them retro, though. They're cute because they remind us of the old days. Kind of like, how about fondue? Do you remember eating fondue in the 60s and 70s?
They're still.
I think we had a fondue pot, used it once.
No. When my sister got married in 1971, I think she got four fondue pots as gifts.
You can go through them. You can use it once. Don't even have to wash it.
Well, you can actually ascertain when people got married by what appliance they got. You know, if they got a bread maker.
In the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. Now they're getting soda streams and Keurig coffee makers.
There wasn't much to be said health-wise for fondue, really, because it's cheese.
Yeah.
Or chocolate. What else would you dip your meat or potatoes?
Well, if it was a meat fondue, sometimes it was just a pot of oil, and you would put the meat in, and it would cook the meat, and then you had sauces.
So it was a hot oil. So you were actually cooking it. Oh, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
that over on the coffee table.
There's now, I mean, there's restaurants now where you can go and get a fondue pot, like you can get a poo-poo platter.
Okay, let's talk poo-poo platter, as long as you brought it up.
Well,
what is a poo-poo platter, David?
It's a platter that was served in a Chinese or, you know, Oriental, what they called them then, restaurant, an Asian restaurant that had appetizers on it.
Yeah.
Usually a couple of spare ribs.
Oh, yeah.
Some fried wonton.
So we've talked about space food. We've talked about cheese. We've talked about...
What did you have in your lunchbox besides that shake-up pudding crap?
Lunchbox. By the way, what kind of lunchbox did I have? What kind did you have, David?
Well, I do remember a Roy Rogers lunchbox very early on, and then I think probably I had a Beatles lunchbox.
Do you remember your first lunchbox and how exciting it was?
Yeah, my first lunchbox was just plaid.
Oh, just a plain one?
Plaid lunchbox.
I can't remember what my first one was, but I do remember my Jetsons lunchbox, and that was a big deal because it had... I love having the thermos inside the hood of the lunchbox.
Well, the Jetsons lunchbox then was like a domed lunchbox.
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about lunchbox food. What went into the lunchbox?
Well, I think all of us had snack cakes. And depending on where you lived, if you're on the East Coast, you might have had Drake's or Tasty Cakes. But for the majority of us, we probably had Hostess.
Hostess, of course, Hostess, yeah.
In fact, the Hostess cupcake was the first commercially produced, mass-produced cupcake. And people think of it with the squiggle and the filling, but that didn't happen until the 50s or the 60s.
Is that really the first of the Hostess line, the cupcake?
Yeah, yeah.
Even before Twinkie? Would you say the Twinkie was their most popular of all their varieties?
Well, I think it's probably gotten the most press. It's maybe the most iconic because of its slight difference. You know, cupcake's a cupcake. But but everyone knows that Hostess cupcake with the squiggle. There are seven squiggles on top of it.
How would you eat? Oh, there's seven squiggles?
Yeah, it's a trademark.
Can I just ask how you would eat your Hostess cupcake? Did you just simply bite into it and eat it all in one?
No, I think eventually, I mean, 9 times out of 10, I peeled the top off.
Of course.
But I tried to do it because the chocolate frosting kind of seeped over the sides just a little bit, so I would try and get out all the, you know, like the lift up the side, and then the goal was to get the icing off in one complete piece.
Oh, yeah.
You know, one thing we didn't talk about that was a key thing of my childhood, but only possibly because it only happened every, maybe for a month per year.
What?
Were Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, yeah, Girl Scout cookies.
Still a big thing.
It is still a big thing. They've evolved a lot, and there's new flavors.
I don't want to name names, but I have friends that used to freeze their Girl Scout cookies and then haul them out months later as like a treat.
This would be my wife you're talking
about.
Yes. Otherwise, she did realize that if she didn't put them somewhere else, they would go.
That her husband would eat
because,
them.
Because, as I recall, your definition of a serving size for Girl Scout cookies is a sleeve.
Right. There's usually, like, especially with the men, they're packaged 2 sleeves to a box, and 1 sleeve is a serving. You know what's really fascinating to me about the mint? The mint thin mints are above and beyond the most popular Girl Scout
cookies.
They're
so good.
The first Girl Scout cookies were just sugar cookies. There was a troop in, I think, Oklahoma that decided to raise money, and they made their own sugar cookies and sold them. And that's where the organization got the idea to do a cookie drive every year.
Oh.
I don't really remember when the Thin Mints were introduced, whether it was the first year or the third year or whatever. But today, currently, they account for about 25% of all the sales of Girl Scout cookies are Thin Mints.
Oh, interesting.
But what's more interesting to me is that if you ask like retailers or whatever, or if you look at the cookie industry, they're the three top selling cookies, you know, of all every year are Oreos, then Chips Ahoy, then Girl Scout Thin Mints.
Wow.
So Girl Scouts are the third most popular selling cookie, yet they're only available 3 months out of the year.
Why don't they make them year round?
Well, I think
would it lose the magic?
Yeah, and I think there's a movement now that you can order them online.
Mm.
So there is a chance that they will be available more.
I wonder
frequently.
If that'll ruin it because we do feel like when
you do
we
look
see
forward them, to them.
We
yeah.
look forward to them. Yeah.
So,
David, this has been interesting. We've learned a lot today. A lot.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go look for my cookies.
You know what? We are all out of cookies. I ate the last Girl Scout cookie about 2 months ago. Okay. I'm sorry about that.
All right. Do you have any chocolate chip cookie dough?
Oh, you'd eat that raw, wouldn't you?
Of course.
Oh, of course. Thanks, we've been talking to David Hoffman, author. By the way, is your book Pigging Out still available? Probably
no.
not. This long
it's gone. Been out of print for a long time.
Okay, here's the thing. If anybody out there can find a copy of Pigging Out.
Oh, yeah. You can find it on eBay, and things like that. And you can find it for like two pennies.
Two pennies. A good
maybe
deal.
One penny. Then you have to pay $3.99 shipping, so it's actually that's where they make their money.
Okay, David Hoffman, thanks so much. And for the rest of you, make sure to check us out for all the news for baby boomers and beyond. Check us out at olderandwiser.com. Thanks for listening.